good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about flucytosine concentrations and their measurement and how to adjust the dose. My name is David Denning and I work at the University of Manchester and also at the National Tuberculosis Centre. So our intended learning outcomes today are to understand the pharmacology and pharmacokinetics of flucytosine, particularly relevant under and overdosing, to appreciate the different methods that you can use for measuring flucytosine, and to know how to interpret those levels in the clinical setting. So, as I'm sure you all know, flucytosine is a small water-soluble molecule. It's almost completely excreted in the urine. It penetrates all tissues, including CSF, vitreous, and urine, and is therefore quite helpful from a clinical perspective for that reason. It doesn't accumulate except in renal failure, so it's usually dosed four times a day. And it's slowly converted into 5-fluorouracil in the body if it's present at high concentrations. And that, of course, is a chemotherapy agent, and that can depress the bone marrow. Hence the reason to worry about high concentration. So the standard dose of flucytosine is 25 milligrams per kilogram every 6 hours. So for a 50 kilogram woman, you typically administer 1.25 grams four times a day, or a total of 5 grams a day. If you had a 10 kilogram child, they'd end up with 250 milligrams four times a day. And a large adult, 100 kilograms, would receive 2.5 grams four times a day, a total of 10 grams a day. So the older literature and current data sheets recommend a higher dose than that, at 37.5 or 50 milligrams per kilogram every 6 hours. But that's really unnecessarily high, and it doesn't need to be given a higher dose. The challenge, of course, is when you have renal dysfunction. So if you have a creatinine clearance which is less than 40 but more than 20 mils per minute, then you reduce the dose by half, so you give the same dose but every 12 hours. If you have an even lower clearance of that, so between 10 and 20 mils per minute, then you would give the same dose but every 24 hours. And if you have creatinine clearance even lower than that, so in acute or chronic renal failure, clearance less than 10 mils per minute, then you'd give a single dose, and then you do a level until you give the next dose. So a little bit like we do with the aminoglycosides. And what you're trying to do is to not let the dose, the blood level, go above 80 micrograms per mL. What we're trying to achieve is a blood level of 25 to 50 micrograms per mL, and that normally is effective. So we did an audit of our own service some years ago now, and we found that there was a lot of variation. So only 20% of patients were in the therapeutic range. We had 40% had low levels, 5% had undetectable levels, and about 40% had high levels. And so this is in the UK, where the dosing strategies have been around for a long time, and often those slightly higher doses were given than the ones I've suggested, which is one of the reasons we recommended a slightly lower dose. But even in that context, you had 40% of patients with low levels and some undetectable levels. And neonates had higher levels more frequently than non-neonates. And that was quite statistically significant, which is also an issue for us. So the indications for flucytosine TDM, some authorities have said you should measure levels in everybody. In reality, it's particularly important with those with any renal impairment or failure. That's very important to measure levels, and neonates, it's very important to measure levels. Patients on hemofiltration or dialysis also would benefit from levels because it's very difficult to adjust the dose correctly. There's not much data on ECMO or other filters in terms of adjusting dose. There are some patients with short gut syndrome, or they've had major surgery on their bowels, and typically on parenteral nutrition, and they have a slightly higher incidence of candidemia related to their lines. Those patients probably would benefit from checking blood levels. And when you've got a patient on long-term therapies, we sometimes use for very difficult chronic infections, fungal infections, then just checking long-term dosing is helpful. So what we're trying to do is get a peak between 50 and 100 micrograms per mL or milligrams per litre, at a trough between 20 and 40. That's what we're trying to achieve. And it isn't always possible to achieve that, but that's what we're aiming to do. There are five different methods of measuring flucytosine. There's bioassay, which is illustrated in the photograph. There's HPLC, there's gas liquid chromatography, which isn't used very much. There's fluorometry, and so one or two of the biochemistry automatic analyzers can measure flucytosine, and there are enzymatic methods. So the top two are the most commonly used methods. And if you do a flucytosine bioassay, of course, you have to recognize that the majority of patients are also on another antifungal at the same time, because this drug is usually used with something. It doesn't matter too much if there are amphotericin B, because the diffusion of amphotericin B through agar is very small. But it does matter a lot if there are an azole or an echinocandin, because you get diffusion in those of those drugs. It of course requires an overnight incubation, and the dynamic range is between 12.5 and 200 milligrams per liter, so it covers the desired range. The recommendations from the British Society of Medical Mycology show what they're trying to achieve, which is what I've reflected in here. They also suggest that you should do a level at 72 hours after initiating therapy or changing the dose. And there are other potential reasons why you should measure levels, with some with good evidence and some with not such good evidence. So you can see even the concentration recommendations, but there are not brilliant levels of evidence for that, unfortunately. What we do know is that in settings, low and middle income settings, where flucytosine is required for particularly cryptococcal meningitis, that these AIDS patients don't need regular monitoring, unless they have renal impairment or failure. And that's the only exception where it would be helpful to monitor. And as amphotericin B regimens get shorter, which in general they do for these patients, so that the issues around renal impairment get to be less profound. So with that, thank you very much, and I hope that we can all get good flucytosine levels in the future when you're using this drug.